It's more mobile than gold. It appreciates faster than property. Its supply is fixed, unlike stocks and bonds. Its payment network is faster and cheaper than Visa's. The best in Bitcoin made audible. I am Guy Swan, and this is Bitcoin Audible. What is up, everybody? Welcome back to Bitcoin Audible. I am Guy Swan, your professor for today on all things Bitcoin, the guy who has read more about Bitcoin than anybody else you know. This is episode 700 of the show. Not like a super crazy milestone, but it kind of snuck up on me. I was doing a report the other day on like just analytics for the show, and it was like, oh, you have 699 episodes. So like, well, snap, we're 700 episodes. I feel like 1,000 is going to be right around the corner here. Also, I migrated Shitcoin Insider to the new platform, finally. They are now also on the C-Suite network alongside Bitcoin Audible. And episode 6 of Shitcoin Insider, Proof of What, was published just last night. It does not seem that Spotify actually updated. It still only says 5 episodes. So check your feed for anybody who follows the Shitcoin Insider stuff and let me know. Shoot me a DM if yours hasn't updated. I need to look into a lot of platforms. I'm not sure what's happening there, but only a couple of them seem to have updated right now. But anyway, Bitcoin is officially launched. Like it is legal tender. The Bitcoin law went into effect today in El Salvador, and somebody is making a big stink in the market. So apparently there are multiple DDoS attacks on both Bitcoin infrastructure, exchanges. There are multiple exchanges. I think it's like Kraken, Swan Bitcoin, but literally a whole, somebody had like a whole list of different exchanges that were hit really bad. And there's always the possibility that this is just users, but there's also a whole lot of Lightning services and wallets, like Lightning service provider wallets that are also hit, which really makes me think this is a little bit of a coordinated attack, either to just make a lot of money and wipe out a massive amount of longs that were too excited about the news when the rumor had already been traded, or what? You know, I don't know. Maybe this is the IMF attacking. I don't know. It's just a kind of crazy, exciting day in Bitcoin. There's a dip opportunity to buy. So what better time to talk about why Bitcoin has already won? And this, what happened today, might just be another example as to why. So today, we have a very fun, very short piece from first-time author on the show, Akarsh Nalawadeh. Hopefully I said that right, but it is about why Bitcoin has already won. And hopefully, he alludes at the end of this that this might be the beginning of some good FUD breakdown articles, because I always get a really good kick out of those. They're fun stuff to read on the show. Really quick. A huge thank you to our amazing sponsors, Shift Crypto, the Bitcoin developers and engineers who made my favorite Bitcoin hardware wallet, the Bitbox O2, and they are extending a discount to the loyal Bitcoin Audionauts. All you guys have to do is use code GUY to get 5% off when you buy your digital vault or all of the little security tools at the Shift Crypto store. And then, of course, swanbitcoin.com, your auto-buy dollar cost average Bitcoin savings plan. No trading, no nonsense. Just set it up and forget about it. Plus, there's Swan Private Service for the high net worth investors who want the concierge service to have, want their team to ask questions at any time, help with setting up the hardware wallet and custodying your own coins, etc. Check them both out at Guy Swan. Swan has two N's because it's my name.com right at the top of the page. With that, let's get into today's article written by Akarsh Nalawadeh, and it is titled, Bitcoin Has Already Won. The World Is Yet to Realize It. Bitcoin has won. There has never been a more secure, scarce, valuable, transportable, decentralized, and networked asset in all of humanity's history. It is more mobile than gold. It appreciates faster than property. Its supply is fixed, unlike stocks and bonds. Its payment network is faster and cheaper than Visa's. Its user base is growing faster than the internet's was in the 90s. Its market cap is a shade over $1 trillion. It has an enormous potential upside. It's already too big to fail. And yet, skeptics keep repeating the same old FUD. Here's where I'll break it down. Bitcoin is a railway network in cyberspace. What's, quote, greener, driving to work or getting the train? Obviously, the train, right? But what if you factor in the total energy consumption of building a fully functional and connected rail network? It took decades and billions of dollars, money is energy, to create a rail network that everyone can use for a fraction of the cost. That's what Bitcoin is, a railway network in cyberspace. The energy used up to create this massive, secure, decentralized, and redundant network is enormous, but only when viewed in isolation. When it's complete, and it almost is, it will allow anyone to send money to anyone else anywhere at any time for almost no cost. Pure, frictionless monetary energy flowing between parties across the Bitcoin rails. Ultra fast, ultra secure, and ultra reliable. Imagine trying to send your friend in Bhutan a bar of gold at 12:45 p.m. on a Sunday. Bitcoin does this in a second. Bitcoin unlocks trapped energy. Everything is either matter or energy, and humans need energy to survive. We've always converted energy from one form to another. Take electricity, for example. Electricity cannot be transported for more than 500 miles. That's a hard limit. So when human populations blossomed in cities throughout history, New York City, Bombay, London, Paris, Singapore, electricity had to be transported to them. And because of the hard limit, we built power stations. We expanded so much energy to bring energy to people. But there's trapped energy on Earth in places that are entirely uninhabitable. Streams, seas, deserts, forests, geysers, ice caps. What if you could convert the kinetic energy of a remote waterfall in the middle of an uninhabited part of the Amazon rainforest into electricity, and use that to power a Bitcoin mining rig? You've now converted natural, renewable energy into an asset. Now multiply that by a billion. There are a billion sources of trapped energy on our planet which we ignored simply because we don't live near them. A totally decentralized, unintrusive, renewable network of Bitcoin rigs whizzing away to create a secure, decentralized asset network, powered by Mother Nature. We don't need this electricity to be fed into our homes because no one lives there. How about we use it to mine Bitcoin instead? More energy does not mean more Bitcoin. Hey, if Bitcoin is really this valuable, why don't we use every single computer chip on the planet to do one thing? Mine Bitcoin. Won't this mean we can mine more of it and get paid and get rich? Isn't that what we did with the gold rush? Well, no, you can't, because of the beauty of the difficulty adjustment. You see, unlike fiat money, which can be conjured up from nothing, remember, money is energy, and energy can't be created nor destroyed. Fiat money breaks the first law of thermodynamics and is thus bogus. The number of bitcoins that can be mined are fixed. When you, quote, mine, you get rewarded for your work in Bitcoin. You can only ever mine a fixed number of Bitcoin in a particular cycle, and this reward halves every 4 years. As more and more miners pile in with their supercomputing hardware into this digital gold rush, the Bitcoin algorithm automatically adjusts the difficulty to make it harder to mine the fixed number of Bitcoin. When China banned Bitcoin mining a few months back, 50% of the Bitcoin mining network went down. The difficulty adjustment automatically made it easier for the remaining miners to mine the Bitcoin. You see, it's a genius function of incentive, demand, supply, and computing power. It happens autonomously, and it worked like a charm. Do you think Google would face any issues if 50% of its computing power switched off overnight? Bitcoin is the most secure computer network on the planet. Bitcoin has never been hacked, 12 years and counting. Its greatest weapons? Decentralization and redundancy. Every single Bitcoin node has a copy of the blockchain that every other node has. If you'd like to edit or hack the blockchain, you'd have to get 51% of the entire global Bitcoin mining network to agree with you. You can't because they won't. You see, mining not only generates more Bitcoin, it also secures the network through decentralization and redundancy. So miners are incentivized to mine Bitcoin, and as a byproduct, every Bitcoiner wins. If you'd like to ban Facebook, you give Zuckerberg a call. Who do you call to turn off Bitcoin? That's right. No one. Or everyone. There's so much more FUD that I'll be debunking in the next few days. This was simply a taster. Bitcoin is a rabbit hole that never ends. It's grounded in economics, ecology, network theory, computer science, mathematics, cybersecurity, and game theory. The more you dig, the more you'll find. It's a trillion-dollar treasure trove that 99% of the world doesn't own. But you can. Why wait? All right. That closes out. I told you this is a pretty short one, but a really good kind of simple thesis for the big picture view of what Bitcoin is and in context of the world that we're sitting in right now. What is this when we are talking about digital assets and digital payment networks? And I think there's so much to unpack just in this, just in the very nature of what does it mean for Bitcoin to have won. And I want to get into it in Guy's Take section real quick, just for a little bit. And before we do, let's hit our sponsor real fast and we will jump back in. Your important documents, your cash that you have, any precious metals you keep in your home, they stay in a secure safe, right? Well, your Bitcoin keys, the precious bits of information holding your digital savings, are even more important to keep safe, and they deserve a secure digital vault to keep them in. The Bitbox O2 is the secure vault for the bits securing your digital gold. Go to my website, guyswan.com. You will see the good-looking device right there at the top of the page. And it's a little sleek, black, minimalist little device. It's a great little thing. It's got USB-C hookup. Plus, it's got a converter if you use a traditional USB. But it's right there at the top of the page, and it will take you directly to their site. Fun quote of mine at the top of the page that I like. It's got all sorts of information and other products to help you keep your Bitcoin safe from hackers, from thieves, from anybody else who would want your coins. And as Bitcoin becomes legal tender in places like El Salvador, there's going to be more and more people looking to get that precious digital booty. So you want to keep your keys safely secured with a Bitbox O2 hardware wallet, and you get a 5% discount for all the Bitcoin audionauts out there with discount code GUY at checkout. So anybody who's listened to this show for any amount of time knows that I am a sucker for a good analogy. And one of those, the analogy in this piece that really had me like, oh man, I love that framing. Because this is how I think about the Lightning Network, is the railway analogy, is that we are laying down rails for a global payment network. And that is essentially what Bitcoin is. Bitcoin is infrastructure that's laying down a framework for an entirely new global financial system. Now, the similar analogy that I use a lot is that Lightning Network is like the internet, that these are like physical connections like I talk about lightning channels as being physical connections in the real world. So like, it's like laying out a cable line or a fiber line to some other ISP or to some other person in your neighborhood or in your local area to get a connection out into the broader network without any of the physical limitations. So I don't have to, you know, lay a cable across the ocean to connect to somebody in the European Union. And I am not limited to just the two or three ISPs in my area. And it doesn't cost me millions of dollars to lay out a broadband cable or a fiber cable to those institutions. It's just the cost of a Bitcoin transaction. So it costs me a dollar, well, whatever it is right now. I think it's about like 70 cent or something like that, the latest block. So let's just say a dollar for simplicity. It costs me a dollar to lay down a quote unquote any size cable. It could be a dial-up connection. I put $100 in it. You know, that's the total bandwidth in that channel. Or it could be a broadband channel that's got $4,000 in it. Or it could be a fiber channel that's got a whole Bitcoin in it. 50 grand, 100 grand, something like that. But no matter what, I'm laying down a new line and I can connect to any node in the entire world. I can connect to an ISP or quote unquote LSP in China. I can connect to one in Singapore. I can connect to one of my friends who happens to have a lot of channels. That's what I've been doing with PlebNet. And I think thinking about that as infrastructure for an entirely new network is the proper way to picture what is actually occurring, because we are building out a Visa network. Essentially, we're building out a global decentralized network for payments and settlement. But I also like that in the energy analogy, because like right now people use this stupid equivocation of, oh, every Bitcoin transaction takes the same amount of energy as like 9 houses or so. I can't remember what it is, like 9 US households or whatever. It's stupid. There's absolutely zero connection, because it doesn't matter if every single block is completely full of just 1-to-1 Bitcoin payments, or if the block is totally empty, or if the block is every single transaction in the block is a channel that settled 200,000 individual payments over Lightning each. So it's totally, totally irrelevant to the amount of energy expenditure in regards to comparing it to a single transaction. Essentially, if somebody uses that analogy, you know they are either being disingenuous or having a completely dishonest conversation, because they're just looking for something to make things sound bad and they don't give a shit if it's true or not, or more likely, they have no fucking clue what they're talking about. Using that analogy is basically like putting a giant banner, I don't know how Bitcoin works. And I really like that framing that Akash puts in this piece of, you have to lay down the groundwork. You have to lay down the rails in order for the train to actually be more cost effective. And for it takes a long time to get over that initial investment. And that's what we're doing. We're laying down the framework for an entirely new, far more secure, and properly economically incentivized global financial system and monetary base that will then have layer upon layer upon layer built on top of it. And, you know, there's been a number of people like Alex Leishman from River.com. I think he's the CTO over there. Alex was talking about, and I've heard a number of people actually talk about this, because during this huge hash rate migration, we had first the mining dropped off the network heavily. And this is actually something that Akash brings up in this piece that I really love, and we'll get back to it in just a second. But during this huge hash rate migration, block count or all the block production slowed down quite a bit, because we had 50% of the mining power leave, and difficulty adjustment was, you know, in heavy flux. And then there's a lot of mining power coming back on the network. And so we've gotten to see this really amazing time period, this shift in the Bitcoin infrastructure, the actual hardware and the base, the physical base of the network that's keeping it alive, and to see how Bitcoin adjusts in really one of the biggest infrastructure shifts that Bitcoin has seen to date. And honestly, I am super bullish by how that went and exactly how we saw the network and the physical infrastructure of Bitcoin respond to that new development. But Alex Leishman or Leishman, I don't know how to spell it or say it, pointed out that even now, well, now with this like big, like huge red candle here, blocks are back full again. There's been a lot of activity just because of trading and withdrawing and sending to exchanges, et cetera, et cetera. So blocks are full again right at this moment, but we have continued to have small blocks or not completely full blocks. There's been no pressure for fees on the network. And I really think a lot of people are discounting how much Bitcoin how much Lightning has attributed to that. And I've had a conversation with a couple of different people and they've said, no, I don't think Lightning has done that yet. And if that's the case, then I'm even super more scared about the fee market. I'm like, I don't know. It just, it seems completely intuitive to me that when we unlock a 10x, 100x capacity increase, naturally, you're going to have such a huge increase in scaling potential that it's got to take all the load off the base layer. When Lightning becomes the norm for how to interact with payments, and I genuinely think it is, there are more places for me to spend Lightning balances now for normal payments and to spend throughout my day than there are Bitcoin. I generally, or at least, those are all the services that I know. I guess maybe I'm not paying attention to the ones that are Bitcoin focused, but that has been the norm. Everybody I interacted with at the Bitcoin Standard Conference in Mexico, everybody I interacted with at BitBlock Boom, everybody I had repay me for some meal or we shared some sats back or whatever it was, we all did it over Lightning. Everybody. In fact, there was only one person who was like, just give me a Bitcoin address to send it to when we were trying to split a meal, because I did this like a handful of times so I could use my Fold card, get my sats back, and then they would pay me in Bitcoin. And I was basically using it as an opportunity to stack Bitcoin. And they asked me for a base layer, an on-chain address. And it kind of threw me for a loop because I was so used to Lightning that I forgot that that's how I had done this basically every year until now. And I'd also be pretty curious, and maybe I should actually just hit up Gary on this, is how many people paid directly in Bitcoin or paid over a Lightning wallet to the merch counter at BitBlock Boom? Because I would suspect that it was way, way more people using Lightning this year than last year. And if you see the number of channels and nodes on the Lightning network, I think we're seeing a new railway opening. So, or basically a new layer of this infrastructure really coming into its own. I think it's becoming the default way that if you were doing payments and you were interacting with Bitcoin in a common way, if you're doing streaming sats, blah, 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 you're onboarding into Lightning now. And I think that necessarily comes with empty blocks when we move to that phase of things. I don't see how that doesn't become the case. Because as soon as we start doing that, the base layer is purely a number of users that we are onboarding. That's essentially that's what that metric becomes, because everybody's opening channels and rebalancing channels as opposed to making specific payments. But laying out that infrastructure is what will make high fees, a solid fee market, sustainable down the road. But I think we got to get to like 500 million users before we start seeing that again. Like in real earnest volume back to the base layer. And I would think it might be different if Lightning was like a small increase. You know, if it was like SegWit that like just got us like 1.3 megabytes or 1.4 megabytes as opposed to one. You know, I would expect there to be consistent demand on chain. But that's not what Lightning is, you know? Like I've done thousands of transactions. Like I just went to my node now because there's people have been talking about like there is some semblance of maybe DDoS attacks and things going on the network right now, and some exchanges being hit and even some Lightning nodes being hit. So I just went to my Lightning node just to see what was up, and it looks like somebody is maybe, or at least it's going out to BTC sessions, coming in from my Breeze channel and going out to BTC sessions channel, and I've marked that both of those routes at zero sat. So I'm not even charging like a fee to route on those at the moment. But I don't know if it's ending at BTC Sessions, but it could just be that somebody's listening to BTC Sessions podcast and they're streaming sats to them. But I've been routing payments all morning. I think it was it looked like it was about an hour and a half show based on the number of streaming sats that went through my node and for how long they, you know, were going through this morning. Or actually it was just early afternoon. But that's a lot of payments to take off the base layer. You know, if we're talking about applications moving to this and becoming, and you know, that's not an indication that we would have had all of those payments on the base layer, but it's an indication that people are interacting directly with Lightning when they get on. Like that's a proof of concept that Lightning is the way. You know, when somebody's streaming sats, that means that the people on both ends have Lightning wallets, that somebody is, you know, depositing balance from Lightning onto Sphinx, and then somebody who's getting streamed to BTC Sessions or whoever it is depositing or withdrawing from their Lightning wallet onto Sphinx. Both of those users are using Lightning as their interaction to get to and from Sphinx, and everybody on that platform has at least a Lightning wallet via Sphinx, but they probably charged it, they probably deposited it, and actually used the platform with a different Lightning wallet. And I now even, except for Swan Bitcoin, which I just have go to my main multi-sig savings, I even buy on the Lightning network now. I don't know, maybe my experience is that far out of the norm, but I think the people who used Bitcoin the most over the last 2 to 3 years, the real Bitcoiners are essentially moving to Lightning, and they necessitate a large portion of the on-chain activity because those are the people who use Bitcoin, right? Obviously, they would be a significant portion of the traffic on the network. And if those people move to Lightning as the new standard, if they set up a Lightning node, if they download Breeze Wallet and Moon Wallet and Phoenix and Wallet of Satoshi and Blue Wallet, et cetera, and they start, and you know, Bitcoin Beach Wallet, and they start using all of these new services and they become the Lightning adopters, well, then you're talking about a huge part of the main user data load on the main chain vanishing. You're talking about that core part of Bitcoin users moving to a platform that makes them not really visible on the base chain anymore. Now, this could totally all just be bias from the fact that I know this is what I've done, right? Like my handful of transactions that I do from time to time are all Lightning channels. That's basically it. Or it's me moving from cold storage or one of my hardware wallets, my Bitbox or Kobo, which I'm now trying to decommission and get over to Keystone. But I'm moving from those to my Lightning node. But I haven't paid for something with on-chain Bitcoin in a long time. All of my interactions have been channels or deposits to fund channels. And I feel like, I was one person who used on-chain Bitcoin all the time. I even paid $5 fees to buy a plane ticket on Cheap Air or whatever it was because I lived in a large part on Bitcoin. Like it was... these are my finances. So just by my personal experience, I was someone who used on-chain Bitcoin a lot, and now I use on-chain Bitcoin hardly at all. And everything, and yet I use Bitcoin more than ever because I have a Lightning presence. I have tons of Lightning wallets and even multiple Lightning nodes that I use for different reasons. So anyway, that's a really, really long way of saying I think it makes perfect sense that the mempool is has very low pressure right now, and I think we will see that until we start to really saturate the current phase of Lightning adoption, the capacity that base layer, basic one channel per user sort of adoption looks like. And I just don't think that it's something to worry about at this moment. I think we're really far from asking ourselves, does this mean the fee market is secure down the road? Because when we're laying out rails for this new network, it makes sense that we would have more essentially train capacity than we would have passengers at the beginning, if you can lay out rail incredibly fast and you can put out, you know, hundreds and hundreds or thousands of trains in no time, but we don't yet have enough passengers to fill the capacity of all the trains. But anyway, it's a little bit off topic, a tiny bit off topic from kind of what the article was laying out. I really do like that analogy, though. I think, you know, just like the bandwidth for the internet, the laying out fiber cable and laying out actual physical cable lines, the idea of a train rail network and all of the energy and upfront costs that does not yet get paid back, that does not yet have all of the passengers needed to sustain it. You know, you usually build out infrastructure before the customers come because you're expecting the customers to be there in the future. And I think that's where we are right now. But one of the other really big points that he hit in this article that I thought was really, that I just love to mention essentially, is the user base, the estimated user base of Bitcoin is moving faster than the internet did in the 90s. So I think the last estimate I saw was somewhere between 150 million to 200 million, essentially Bitcoin holders and users are on the Bitcoin network. The internet at 12 years in the late 90s was essentially at, I think it was 120 to 150 million. And it kind of makes sense that Bitcoin would move faster because it has the internet to help adopt it. And I think when we see this moving forward, I think Bitcoin adoption is going to accelerate a lot, particularly when there is all of this open space to fill. And I think that's what Lightning is. As Lightning has become the way to onboard and interact with Bitcoin, this excess capacity, these empty blocks are exactly what allow us to push from 150 million, 200 million to a billion. And we're going to go through a huge flood of fees and on-chain capacity problems again when the management of liquidity and the number of things you can do on Lightning grow and expand so fast. When we look at applications and layer three sort of things and all of the issues that Lightning can help solve and the additional security, the holes, the security holes in the internet that can be plugged with Lightning, the ability to use Lightning as essentially a decentralized authentication system, which I think is a huge, huge benefit of Lightning that is largely, I guess, dismissed maybe, or just not properly talked about in how powerful it is. You know, you can't really do anything with it, but at bitcoinaudible.com, you can log in with your Lightning wallet. I love it. I use it with Breeze. That's actually how I edit the website now. I literally break out my Breeze wallet and I scan the login QR. And, you know, I've made that account or whatever, my admin. But logging in and registering is exactly the same thing. So when you click on the login / register button, it just gives you a QR code like any other. And if it's a wallet you haven't used before, it just creates a new registration, and you can go in and edit your, you know, username and, you know, put in a profile picture and all that stuff. But you don't fill something out. You literally sign it one way or the other. If it's a signature that's a user already on the website, it logs you in as that user. If it's a signature of a wallet or set of keys that has not logged into the website before, it's a registration. Period. It's the exact same thing. And think about it. I'm not a honeypot for anything. For nothing at all. Only the information you want to give me. I have zero information about who you are, I don't have a username and password. So do you need to use new passwords on every website? No. Nobody has a password to store on your behalf. That is a massive fucking security hole on the internet that disappears when you talk about putting a public key into the hands of every user that adopts this network. This is a huge, huge shift in the security profile of the internet. It is moving the security problem to the edges rather than the center. And I think this is just a tiny taste of what Lightning can be, how many problems it can solve. And when people are connected to it in those thousands of different ways, when we have those applications like impervious.ai and we're able to make secure, unspammable phone calls over a Lightning public key, or we can establish a VPN connection that way over Lightning so that it can't even be censored, et cetera, et cetera. There's so many different possibilities for things that can be built as a layer three application on top of Lightning. I just think we are looking at that huge surge in the adoption of the internet. I think we are about to see that in Bitcoin. I think the next few years are going to be absolutely insane. We're already seeing things that are insane. El Salvador made it legal tender today. Starbucks, Pizza Hut, McDonald's, these places. And they're using, like I think it was McDonald's was using OpenNode. You know, they're not even using the quote unquote government wallet that everybody was saying, oh, it's going to be centralized and custodial. They just signed up with OpenNode. When you adopt Bitcoin, you adopt a global open source infrastructure. You can use whatever service you want. It's so fascinating to watch this play out. And I think it's really the only thing, like, just like Akash says, is it's more mobile than gold. It appreciates faster than property. Its supply is fixed, unlike stocks and bonds. The payment network is faster and cheaper than Visa's. We are still in the phase where the payment network is expanding at an incredibly rapid pace. There has never been a more secure, valuable, and transportable decentralized asset, a networked asset that you can send over a communications channel anytime in human history. It's unlocking trapped energy sources all over the planet and making our energy grid actually more efficient and more capable, which is a hugely underappreciated aspect of the Bitcoin mining infrastructure of that whole side of the system. It's the most secure decentralized network on the planet. If you missed Dan Kaminsky's I tried hacking Bitcoin and failed article, which was all the way back from 2013, it was his initial thoughts and ideas around the Bitcoin network. It's a fascinating read, and it's just so cool to see even that perspective way back then when people were just kind of shocked that, holy shit, this is an open, decentralized cryptographic network. Obviously, this should fail 1,000 different ways. Holy crap, I can't break it. And then we just saw one of the biggest pieces of FUD around Bitcoin get wiped out. The China miners, the Chinese basically run Bitcoin because all the mining is in their jurisdiction, et cetera, et cetera. We saw the Bitcoin system, the redundancy, the resiliency in action. Half, potentially more than half of the entire Bitcoin network security infrastructure had to shut down and move all around the world in a matter of months, and there was zero interruption in service. The difficulty adjusted perfectly. I had almost no change in how I interacted with everything. Lightning Network continued to work. The base layer continued to work. What other network anywhere could see such a massive shift in the infrastructure, in the computers, the servers, that actually keep the thing running without any interruption in service whatsoever? This is a network that is built to last. This is the Lindy effect in action. The more times this thing is stressed, it is tested, it is DDoSed, it is banned, whatever, the more things that Bitcoin survives, the more likely Bitcoin is going to survive. And at this point, as I say 1,000 times, this is the only thing Bitcoin has to do at this point: survive. And honestly, with today's giant red candles, I couldn't be happier. I was planning on stacking today just for the holiday of September 7th, of it becoming legal tender in El Salvador. And hey, I get a discount. I get a dip to buy on. Dips are my favorite time to buy. Hopefully Swan Bitcoin will be back up. I haven't done it yet, but I'm gonna keep DDoSing them until until I can definitely buy some Bitcoin. And with that, we will close this episode out. I think that's all. Just a fun little one with a really lengthy, obnoxious rant from Guy here at the end of it. But Bitcoin has already won by Akash Nalavade. Nalavade? I think it was something like that. I looked it up, but forgive me. I'm sure I sound like a stupid child trying to pronounce that. Thank you so much for the article. A huge thank you to our sponsors, Shift Crypto with the Bitbox O2 hardware wallet and Swan Bitcoin, of course. The automatic no-hassle savings plan. Both amazing products and companies helping out and pushing forward the Bitcoin community and ecosystem, and also keeping Bitcoin Audible alive, keeping the lights on here so that I am coffeed up and properly fed for another read on Bitcoin Audible. Thank you guys so much for listening. Don't forget to subscribe. Don't forget to check out the latest episode of Shitcoin Insider if you want. We had a fun one, and I will catch you all back here next time on Bitcoin Audible. Until then, everybody, take it easy, guys. This has been Bitcoin Audible, a 111 production.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.